Hi, this is Dave Schwartz. Welcome to my show on horse handicapping. First of all, just to get a few things out of the way, I've got a website, thehorsehandicappingauthority.com. Don't forget, thehorsehandicappingauthority.com. I'm here on Blog Talk every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you go to my Blog Talk page and you scroll down below, you'll see the archived shows. You can find me on Facebook at the Horse Handicapping Authority. We also have a private horse racing group. All you have to do is ask to join. Okay, my topic for today, well, of course, we're going to start with a story. My primary article today is about Gambler's Ruin, and there is a story coming, but I'm not going to do it first. I want to tell you about this book written by Alan Wilson, The Casino Gambler's Guide. It was written in 1965, published by Harper & Row. This is a five-star book for anyone who takes gambling seriously. It covers everything from dice to bias roulette wheels to blackjack, and I highly recommend this book if you can find a copy. I am currently out other than my own original edition, but if you search for it on the web, you'll find you can probably get it for somewhere between $30 and $40 if you'll take a good copy. If you want something better than that, I saw them at 125 and up. But I strongly suggest this. And do not be confused. There's some other books out there, The Casino Gambler's Guide. Make sure it's Alan Wilson, Alan N. Wilson. Okay, now, I'm going to tell you a story, and I'm going to tell you a story that I first told in 1991 at a seminar, and I believe it was in Reno, but it might have been somewhere else. But I've told it many times. And there's a punchline here because I actually got some of it wrong. But the story is to illustrate what the gambler's ruin is all about. The gambler's ruin problem essentially says, and we're going to apply it to flatbeds, specifically the roulette wheel. It addresses the possibility of winning a session of X number of units. And we're going to use roulette as an example. Now, I want you to imagine... when I first told this story, you could actually bet a dollar on the roulette wheel all over Las Vegas. Now I think you'd be hard-pressed to even bet less than $5 or $10, maybe more. But I want you to imagine that there is a guy who comes to Las Vegas every weekend to play roulette. And he comes with precisely $100 to gamble with. And he bets $1 at a time on the color red at the roulette wheel. Now, the math of the roulette wheel is not complicated. Okay, if you bet on red, there are 36 primary numbers and a zero and a double zero. So you have 18 ways. There are 18 reds, 18 blacks, and 2 greens. So you have 18 chances out of 38. And the disadvantage in that game is 5.26% if you want to do the math. Okay, so the question is this. This man who bets $1 at a time, he's got $100, he bets $1 at a time until his bankroll, his $100 doubles, or it goes away. So in other words, he's trying to win 100 units before he loses 100 units. And I presented this question for the first time to a seminar group, and I asked, he goes once a week with this $100, goes every weekend, plays until he wins or loses $100. How often does he win? How often does he win? The first time I told this story, one fellow raised his hand and he said, okay, I'm going to apply a little logic here. He said, if he's got a 5% disadvantage, that would mean he would win, it's like 47.5 to 52.5. So he said, if he comes once a year and there's 52 weeks in the year, then I would suggest he would win like 24 of them, about 47%. And another guy put forth an opinion, and he said, "What?" So the first answer we had, not 24%, 24 wins out of 52 weeks. And another guy stood up, and he said, no. He said, there's an impact of compounding here. And he said, it's harder than that. He said, I think it's more like 22 wins a year. Now, make your own mental guess. What are the chances of such a player winning? So wins on, the whole idea is to win 100 units before you lose 100 units. You never bet more than one unit. It's a flat bet, and you have a 5.26% disadvantage. So the funny thing was, these two guys in the audience argued, their voices raised, to the point where we really thought somebody was going to have to intervene between them. And I said to them, I said, you know, you guys, when I tell you the answer to this, you are going to be so astounded you're going to realize how ridiculous quibbling over two wins a year really is. And the funny thing is, I gave them the incorrect answer. I reworked the calculation today, and I've been telling this story for 23 years, and I've been telling it wrong. So the answer that I gave them was, he would win once in every 640 years. 640 years. Once every 640 years. Well, the punchline is I was wrong. It's not 640 years. It's 6,410 years. Now, what does this have to do with anything? Well, I'm going to spend a moment on the calculation just so you get it, okay? And then I'll make some points. Think of it, if you went to Las Vegas with that $100 and you broke it into $100 unit, that's funny, broke it into one single bet, then if you went 52 times in the year, it is logical that you would win about 47% of the time. It is logical, okay? Because it's one unit, it's one bet, okay? But if you used two $50 units or four $25 units, can you imagine that the more units you have to get ahead, the more difficult it is to overcome the disadvantage, the takeout, if you will, the vigorish, if you're old enough to remember that word. So just to give you an idea, with one unit, you've got a 47.37 chance of winning. If you went to five units, so you took that same $100 and you broke it into $20 units and you bet $20 at a time until you were ahead $100, so you had a total of 200, or you had nothing and you lost 100, okay, you have a 37% chance of winning. So going from one unit to five units has taken you down substantially. If you go to 10 units, in other words, if you're now betting $10 units instead of $20 units, so you've got to win 10 times, you've got to get ahead by 10 units, you now have a 26% chance of winning. At 20 units, it drops to 21. That doesn't sound right. That's probably not right. That's probably 15. At 25 units, you have a 6.7% chance of winning. In other words, if you went with 25 units, you're betting $4 at a time, and the goal is to win $100, your chances of winning are, you'll win 52 times 6.7%, you'll win 3.5 times. You will be just decimated. You will be destroyed. At 50 units, you'll win approximately 5 times in 1,000 trips. And at 100 units, you will win 3 times out of every 1,000,000 chances. Now, I really want you to get a feel for this, because I want you to imagine if you go to play a game with a 5.26% edge against you, negative expectancy, okay? You went with 100 units. Imagine if you were plotting this, how you would plot the losing streak. How far, or the winning streak for you, losing streak for the house. Imagine the kind of streak you would have to get 100 units ahead, betting one unit at a time. And I assure you, the mathematics are sound. You will find them in the Casino Gambler's Guide. Okay, so what is the point? The point is that a small disadvantage will destroy the player in the long run. Every time, all the time. If you have a negative expectancy, you will lose. Now, we've been talking about an even money game. As the odds widen, if you're betting horses at 3-1, you've got a better chance of getting lucky than if you're betting horses at even money. I don't mean lucky in one race, but I mean of compounding it, right, to win successive times. Okay, now, just for a second, let's talk about the difference between the casino and the player. We'll get to horses afterwards, but imagine you're standing at the roulette wheel and you've got this 5.26% disadvantage. So imagine there is the casino owner on the other side of the table smiling every time that you make a bet. Okay? So what's the difference between your side and his side? Well, the casino has an advantage. Period. That's not the case in horse racing, but always. But the casino has the advantage at roulette, and you cannot make it go away. The player gets to control how much he bets. Now the question is, can the player, by controlling how much he bets, overcome the casino's advantage? And the answer is no, he cannot. The player could not, in the long run, beat the casino, period. Can he get lucky? Absolutely. Can he do it one unit at a time? Not going to happen in 100 lifetimes. Not going to happen in 100 lifetimes. Let that settle in. By the way, let me ask you a question. Is there anything short of changing the game that the guy on the casino side of the table could do to cause the casino to lose? I mean, right, the way it works normally, as I said, the casino side has the edge and the player controls the bets. What if the casino side controlled the bets? Is there anything that he could do that would take away his advantage? Is there any way he could bet the money in some tricky way that would nullify the advantage? The answer is no. Couldn't do it. Can't be done. Period. Cannot be done. The casino could not create a way to lose. By the way, if they could, do you not think that there would be more than a few ultra-wealthy floor men who had people out there playing the roulette wheel and he was telling them how much to bet? You have to know. Of course. There would even be casino owners who were taking money out of the casino, skimming in their own way if it could be done. It can't be done. You cannot ever turn a positive into a negative with a betting strategy. Now, can the wager size, the changing of wager size, cause more extremes so that the player may get lucky? Yes. I mean, as we've said, if he walks in with $100, technically the best way to play, if you have a negative expectancy, is to take every dollar that you would ever wager in your entire lifetime, build one gigantic pile, and make one bet, and that's the best shot that you will ever get. Win, lose, draw. Okay, of course that's not how it works, but that would be the very best way. And I know there's somebody out there who's going to say, oh, but you could overbet the bankroll. Well, if you could get the casino to overbet the bankroll, then I invite you to go to a roulette wheel, because you are in charge of how the bets are sized. So if you can make the casino overbet their side, well, how do you do that? We bet more on your side, okay? You're in control of how much money the casino bets, because they're betting whatever you are willing to put up. They're paying the reciprocal. So let us, you must get this solidly in your head, that casino with an edge will win every time, all the time, when it comes to extremes like 100-unit swings. One unit at a time. Okay, now we move to the real point. What if you're the one with the advantage? Forget roulette for a minute. Imagine that you have built yourself a system that makes this 5% advantage. Okay? Then you are on the same side of the equation as the casino is. But, you also get to control the size of the bets. So you are in total control with an advantage. Guess what? You win every time, all the time. Oh, I don't mean, when I say every time, I don't mean that you win every day. I mean, just like going to the casino, if you play a substantial session for a substantial number of units, you will win with your advantage every single time. Okay, I know. I'm going to get letters, I'm going to get phone calls, but think about what I'm saying, okay? Again, we're talking about an even money game. In the Alan Wilson book, there is a formula for uneven odds. It is quite a bit more complex than this one, and it's just not something that is easily explained. But the point is, and this is the point I'm trying to make, if you can get that 5% advantage, you will win. What would cause you to lose? Nothing. Now, you can have fluctuations. Just like with the casino, you can overbet the bankroll and cause fluctuations, but in the long run, you still win, assuming you have bankroll to play with. So the key points here are that if you have the advantage, you will win. When I hear guys say, you know, I'm a win better, and I make 20 bets a day, okay, and I play 5 days a week. So you do the math, 20 times 5, that's 100 bets a week, 4.33 weeks in a month. So you're going over 400 bets a month, okay? If this guy is out there playing with 100 units or 50 units or whatever the number is, there is an equation, depending upon his average odds, there is an equation that would tell him what his chances of winning before his chances of losing are. Okay? But most people don't apply this. Instead, some people will flat bet, and that's fine. But they'll talk about, oh, I have had, I've lost 2 or 3 months in a row. Okay, it depends on the magnitude of the number of bets that you make. But you need to know, if you've got a 5% advantage, okay, the world is your oyster. And it's all a matter of building the bankroll. Of course, building the bankroll logically indicates you will escalate the bets. And escalating the bets changes the unit size, and all of a sudden you're starting new sessions, and the whole thing changes. But the point is, if you have an advantage, even a small advantage, it can be leveraged with compounding, and that equation just expands things. But here comes the really important issue here. Do you really have an advantage? Now, the only way you will know if you have an advantage is to track your bets. And believe me, it is, you know, you can't go out and make, you know, got a guy who says to me, I make 50 bets a year. Actually, this was posted on a webpage, paceadvantage.com. And I've used this example many times. I'm not trying to beat this individual up. I happen to personally like his post, and I don't disbelieve him. I make 50 bets a year, okay? And I get a 100% advantage. That was the quote that he made to me. Aside from the fact that you're making Walmart wages at 50 bets a year, aside from that, the problem that he faces is, in truth, it could be years, decades, before he has enough wagers to really know that he is a winning player. And I get it. Everybody's going to say, yeah, I'll just count the dead presidents in my account, okay? Yeah. What I'm telling you is, the guys that say, well, I've done well for 3 years and then I lost for a year, okay, well, they did that. The likelihood of losing for a year means one of two things. Either, number one, you're not making a lot of bets, or number two, you simply don't have an advantage. And maybe you did have an advantage in previous years. Maybe the world has changed. Maybe your systemology has changed. What I'm talking about here is denial of truth. It's very simple. Winning players win and losing players lose. Now, there's a part two coming, so hang on. So what about the casual player? Suppose you are a casual player. That is, you play once or twice a week. You play one or two tracks. You make a few bets. Sometimes when you go up, you go down. You go up, you go down. Go back and count. Compare the withdrawals from your account to the deposits that you've made. And you will find, I won't say it's impossible. Of course it isn't impossible. But it is pretty rare to find a casual player that is actually a winning player. And I'm not here to beat you up. Neither am I telling you ought to quit the game. I mean, I actually got an email from somebody after doing a show somewhere, maybe talking on Derek Simon's show that I so dearly enjoy. I got feedback. Well, are you telling me I can't win? Yes, that's exactly what I'm telling you. You can't win in the long run. Now, I've used the golfer example, the PGA golfer story before, and it's all true. Okay, there are plenty of golfers that play very seriously because they love the game and they'll never be on the PGA Tour. They will never win a purse. Okay, that doesn't mean they should give up the game. They enjoy the game. I stress that what you want to do, and here, I'm really, I promise, this is, you know, I'm very passionate about this because I see people who don't give themselves a chance to win. Okay, first of all, if you're playing pick sixes, good for you. But with the size of the takeout, you might as well buy a lottery ticket. I mean, the payoffs are similar and the chances of hitting are pretty much like that, okay? Or go play Keno. I mean, the takeout is similar. It's huge. Or go play a slot machine with a big jackpot, okay? If you're playing for hundreds of thousands of dollars in payoffs, you know, you might be that one guy that gets it. I mean, you know what they say? It's like getting struck by lightning, okay? On the other hand, if you're realistic and you simply want, you don't mind, it's like greens fees, okay? If you go to the OTB or you go to the race book or you play at home and you fill, or you play at home and fill your ADW account and you play to get lucky, that's fine. That's wonderful. And you can be a skilled player. But the key is to put yourself in a position where you are capable of winning. And that's part two of this conversation. Okay, just to be clear, part one of the conversation, what I'm trying to get people to see is, number one, if you have an advantage, in the long run, you will win. Even if you misbet the bankroll, if you overbet your bankroll and you go broke, you'll come back with another bankroll, you'll overbet it again, and eventually the money will come to you, just like the money comes to the casino if you have an advantage. Okay. Part two of that is, if you have a disadvantage and you bet little tiny units, you cannot possibly win. They will simply grind you out. dollar box, what are the chances of winning at $2 a pop? What are the chances of winning $100 if you bet $2, $2, $2? You got to go 50 units up, okay? That's pretty hard. I mean, unless you can do it in one race if you're betting horses that are 50 to 1 and higher, okay? But a more realistic, pleasurable, enjoying experience is to get lucky. You can parlay. You can bet some exactas. There are all kinds of ways to do it. But so part two of this is thou shalt not flat bet or bet small units if you are a losing player. Losing, definition of losing, what I mean is a negative expectancy player. Okay? So when we look at your chances, by the way, when I dealt craps, we would have people come to the table and they'd bet, you know, dollar, 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 or $2, $2, $2. And we'd say, yeah, why don't you have some fun? Why don't you just let loose, bet a dollar, and stack it up four or five times? You know, you win for a dollar, you bet two. You bet two. If you win for two, you bet four. If you bet four and you win, you go to eight. Then take a little profit and bet some more back. The point is, that's where the juice comes from. That's where the pleasure of playing comes from. It comes from winning. Now, I'm not addressing the guy who says, I want to be a professional player here. I'm talking about a guy who is playing the game for the enjoyment of the game and is trying to get lucky. You know, I just thought of an analogy. It's kind of like, imagine if, it's how you define a win. I mean, imagine this guy who is, say, a 3-handicap golfer who goes out on the course and his goal is to count how many holes he birdies. I mean, he wants a good score and he's going to consistently shoot that 75, 76. Occasionally, maybe he'll shoot par, maybe even break par once in a while, okay? And that's very exciting for him. But most of the time, he's, you know, he's going to be shooting someplace around that handicap, one would assume. Of course, I don't really understand golf handicaps, but I assume a 3-handicap means you're expected to shoot a 75. But imagine there are other ways to make the game pleasurable. For example, to count how many birdies you have. On the other hand, if you had 6 birdies and shot a 93, you still wouldn't feel very good about it. But for the handicapper, the analogy I'm drawing is you went to the track with your $200 and you hit a $47 horse and you came back with only $240. Okay? Well, you're going to count that as a winning day. You're going to count that as a successful day. And so, but I the important thing to note is to connect up in reality the winning, whether or not you're really going to win long term. And do not delude yourself. Okay, you should, if you look at a session of, let's say, 300 bets, 300 horse-by-horse bets, okay, you should pretty much be able to beat the game. And if you aren't beating the game in that 300-bet period, I mean, so you certainly you're going to go up and down. But, I mean, if you're getting demolished and you have to completely refill your account every single month in order to play, then maybe you need a different strategy. Maybe you need to improve your handicapping or improve your money management. And probably it does start with handicapping. I can't tell you how many guys that I've known since I've been doing this. And this is year, our 24th anniversary will be in April of horse racing full time. I cannot tell you how many guys have a negative expectancy who say the only thing wrong with my game is I don't bet well. You know, certainly you do have to bet well. But if your approach works, it should produce profit. Okay, I'm going to end this here. I would expect to get both some positive and some negative feedback on this. And I, you know, I'm a realist, okay? I mean, I want people to understand that we are what we... There is reality, and we can pretend it's different, but reality is reality. On the topic of improvement, this is a new year. A newsletter went out today to everybody on my mailing list. And in that newsletter, I talked about, this is the new year, this is when everybody makes New Year's resolutions, and the question is, what are you going to do to improve things this year? And of course, you know where I'm going to go first. I'm going to say keep score. Okay, and now, the reason you need to keep score is because that gives you a benchmark. I mean, there's got to be some way, even if you are a casual player, to improve yourself, you have to know if something is working. And, I'm running a little long here. That's a pretty long article. You have to know if something is working, you need a benchmark. Now, the logical benchmark is to take the dollars won divided by the dollars bet, or something to that effect, okay? But you can also look at, some of your largest bets, some of your, in other words, maybe you're playing very poorly or you're playing very well on your large bets. Are you taking a position in the right scenarios? Are there kinds of races you're just not doing very well at? you know, I can go through some very meaningful stories. I remember a long time, Dale in Maryland, a long time users of ours, until he decided to ruin it all by getting wealthy buying and selling homes. But they were a team, and they played the races together. And some of my longtime customers that I know are listening to this know exactly who I'm talking about. And they used to play one by one pick threes. Or was it two by two by two? Whatever. In Southern California. And they were doing very, very well. And then all of a sudden, like, I mean, to the point where they doubled their bankroll, I want to say three or four times. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the summer, well, June, July, all of a sudden, they couldn't win a pick three. And so I looked at their betting records with them, and it was very easy to see what it was. They weren't very good in races with first-time starters. And, of course, they'd been doing so well for so many months. And now, playing pick threes, the occasional race with the first-time starter was ruining their pick threes. Their hit rate per race, I remember now, they played two by two by two, and their hit rate per race was like 53%. Again, this is from memory many years ago. 53%, 54%, something like that on the two horses. And whatever it was, the pick three, was they were hitting, I think it was 11% of their pick threes. And all of a sudden, they dropped to like 8.5. And it's because here was a kind of race that was beating them in the pick threes. And, you know, in Southern California, traditionally in those days, the fourth race and the sixth race were pick threes. I mean, were maiden races. And, of course, during the summer, they would have a lot of first-time starters. Well, imagine those two races, how many pick threes it would take you out of on the day. So one of the first places to look is to look at the kinds of races you're winning and losing at. And for many of you, this could be a very courageous move. Because I understand people who are making lots of deposits and very few withdrawals really do not want to keep score. Listen, you don't need to show the score to anybody. Just keep it and look at it and look at how fast, if you're losing money, look at how fast you're losing money. It's like stopping the bleeding, okay? If you can slow down the flow of blood, you are improving. Okay, next item coming up, I want to give you something to take with you that you can really use. One of the new features of our show is that every week I want to give you a handicapping angle for you to think about, something that might be able to help you in your game, and it is primarily aimed at the casual player, okay? So when I give you these angles, I am not suggesting that you're going to take this little system I'm going to give you and take it out and make a living with it, okay? That is not within the realm of possibility. In 1982, William L. Scott wrote a book called Investing at the Racetrack. In Investing at the Racetrack, he introduced the concept of the double advantage horse. And this is from memory. I haven't picked the book up in probably 15 years. But as I recall, he talked about horses looking at speed ratings that had, I think it was the last speed rating was higher than everybody else's, and the next to last was also higher by, I think it was by 2 points or something like that, two lengths, if you will. I want to introduce to you a slightly different kind of double advantage horse. And maybe I should call it the triple advantage. I don't know. But essentially, imagine that you look at, in each horse's past performances, you look at the best of last two speed ratings in sprint races and the best two of last three in route races. The best of last two, that is, you look at the last two speed ratings and you pick the better of those speed ratings in sprint races. And in route races, you look at the last three, and you take the best two of those three, and you average them together. And I'm ignoring distance switches. All I'm talking about is speed ratings here. And I know somebody will say, well, can you use the Beyer number? Sure, why not? Can you use the Brist numbers? Of course you can. Why not? Okay, so every horse in the race will get a speed rating, a number. Either if it was a sprint race, best of last two, and if it's a route race, best two of last three, turned into one number, averaged together, okay? The second thing I want you to do is I want you to take the average of the last three races. Average of the last three speed ratings. And finally, a third number, you want to look at each horse's best speed rating ever. Best speed rating in the last 10 is what I mean by ever. So you wind up with three speed ratings for each horse. What you are looking for, what you will find, the first column, best of last two or best two of last three, the second column, average of the last three, and the third one, the best ever. You will find that horses in column number three that have the best or within 1 point of the best speed rating in the race, for best ever. The horses that qualify there, being in like the top two, or within a point of the top, that do not qualify as being in the top two for either of the other two categories, will pay a significant price if they win. Just take a look at this and see if it doesn't intrigue you. So, okay? And you may want to re-listen to the last few minutes of this show. I'm going to end here. I did rant a little bit today. Just to remind you, we are thehorsehandicappingauthority.com. You can find us on the web, thehorsehandicappingauthority.com. We're doing more and more with our Facebook page now. Find me on Facebook, find The Horse Handicapping Authority, and like the page and post there. Search for me, and I'm Dave Schwartz, specifically D-A-V-E-S-C-H-W-R-E-N-O. 12 letters, just the first four letters of my first name, last name, and the city I live in. If you search for that, you will find me, friend me. I will introduce you to all of our groups and let you know where to find things. Do go to our website and add your name to our email list. Folks, have a great day. Drive safe on the way home.